Ladies and gentlemen, recording from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to another edition of the one and only podcast known to the world as Sean's Sports Stop, where Sean Teplitsky gives his unique opinion on the biggest news stories in sports.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Stop podcast. As you just heard, legendary UFC ring announcer Bruce Buffer do the intro. I geek out every time I do an episode because Bruce Buffer is such a legend. Wherever you guys may be, however you may be listening, I greatly appreciate it. Normally, when I take an extended sabbatical or any kind of break from doing the podcast, I have some kind of valid excuse or reason as to why I haven't been doing the podcast lately. I've frankly just been a lazy bum. I mean, I don't really have any valid reasons as to why I haven't been pumping out episodes. But with that said, I am hoping that that will change. I love doing the podcast. And with that said, let's get right into it. Lord knows we have plenty to talk about. The NCAA men's basketball national championship game between Kansas and UNC is just a few minutes away. It's currently 5:42 p.m. Pacific time here in beautiful Los Angeles, California. The game is in 40 minutes or so. So I figured I don't have much to do. Let's do a podcast episode. And we're going to start off with some baseball. Baseball season is very, very rapidly approaching. So let's get into it. The New York Yankees have added catching depth, some much needed catching depth after the trade of Gary Sanchez ahead of the 2022 regular season. Per an announcement from the Yankees, they are sending pitchers Albert Abreu and Robert Alstrom to the Texas Rangers in exchange for Jose Trevino. Abreu is out of options, so he would have to be included, or he would have had to have been included on the Yankees opening day roster or agree to be sent down to the minors. So this likely works well for him. After posting a fairly disappointing 5.15 ERA in 36 innings last season, Abreu is facing an uphill battle to make the bullpen in the Bronx. I mean, those kind of numbers just don't cut it. I mean, they don't really cut it anywhere, but they especially don't cut it with the Bronx Bombers. He is a solid buy low option with a potential high upside for the Texas Rangers, who are in desperate need of bullpen depth. They're in desperate need of a lot of things, but they spent the most in free agency. I mean, they spent $500 million. That is an absurd amount that they spent between Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, and probably some other under-the-radar moves. The Rangers will be a team to watch. Abreu has put together a strong spring with one hit allowed and no runs given up with six strikeouts over 4.2 innings. So obviously, that's an extremely small sample size, but still, perhaps he can build on that. Hopefully, he could. Alstrom has yet to appear in a professional game, so he is a lot more of a kind of question mark, although Abreu can also pan out to be a future star. You never know with guys, with baseball players. I mean, with all athletes, really, but especially baseball players. Look at Justin Turner. I mean, some guys are truly such late bloomers. Max Muncy, those are just guys that are on the Dodgers that I know kind of off the top of my head since I'm a Dodger fan, but Alstrom was a seventh-round pick by the Yankees in July's draft. The left-hander posted a 2.5 ERA with 92 strikeouts in 90 innings at Oregon in 2021. So obviously, he was extremely efficient at the D1 level. But as we know, Division I college baseball is nowhere near the level of the MLB. I mean, even between D1 college ball and the MLB, there are so many different levels. You got single-A, double-A, triple-A, obviously independent ball, Japan, Korea. There are so many different levels just between Division I college baseball and the MLB. Trevino will likely be New York's primary backup catcher to Kyle Higashioka, who has been absolutely raking this spring. Last I checked, he had 7 home runs. That is absolutely absurd. Though Brantley signed a minor league deal in December with an invite to big league camp, the addition of Trevino allows the Yankees to send him to the minors or even potentially release him. Trevino has appeared in 159 games over the past 4 seasons with the Rangers. The 29-year-old hit .239 with a career-high 5 homers in 89 appearances last year. So obviously he is not an offensive focused player. He is probably known for his defense. I'm not intimately familiar with Jose Trevino. Being intimately familiar with every single Major League Baseball player is virtually impossible, at least for me, because I follow other sports as well. I'm not like Giraffe Neck Mark. I don't just follow baseball only. The Yankees will open the 2022 regular season on Thursday against the Boston Red Sox at Yankee Stadium. Of course, it's Yankees Red Sox to open the season. Why not? The greatest rivalry in baseball, the Yankees and the Red Sox. Let's do it. Switching gears to football, the Washington Commanders allegedly held back ticket revenue that is supposed to be shared with other NFL teams, according to Front Office Sports. NFL teams are required to send 40% of ticket sales from every home game to the league. The NFL then distributes the money to away teams. Interesting, never knew that. According to AJ Perez of Front Office Sports, the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Oversight and Reform received information, at least one person saying the Commanders did not provide the full 40% of ticket sales. So this might finally be the straw that breaks the camel's back with Dan Snyder and selling the Washington Commanders. Still got to get used to that. Redskins football team, Commanders. Commanders is, I mean, it's definitely a polarizing name. I personally am not a huge fan of it. I think anything is better than Washington football team, although people did kind of get used to that, myself included. But this is, I mean, the Washington Commanders, I was going to say football team, the Washington Commanders just as a team cannot keep themselves out of the headlines for all the wrong reasons. I saw a few days ago, I'm not sure if it was before or after this latest scandal came to light, Alex Smith, former Commanders quarterback, he essentially called the Commanders franchise a dumpster fire. And usually when things like that are said, at least in the world of sports, they are said in a kind of either passive aggressive or indirect manner. But Alex Smith, I mean, he's retired. He did not hold back in any way. He said it how it is or how he feels it is, and a lot of people perceive it to be the same way. So things are just getting worse for the Commanders. Ticket sales, quote, ticket sales not only impact other teams but also the players, since ticket revenue is factored into overall league revenues that are used to come up with each year's salary cap. That makes perfect sense. No disrespect to the Washington Commanders. They get slandered enough, but I mean, them not reporting some of their ticket sales is not exactly kind of analogous with the Rams or the Cowboys or the 49ers or a real big-time team in the NFL not reporting their ticket sales. I'm sure the NFL will survive without these reported ticket sales, or unreported ticket sales, I should say, excuse me, from the Washington Commanders. But I mean, I'm not surprised that they are involved in this scandal. They're like the gift that keeps on giving. The 2022 salary cap is $208.2 million, which is an increase of more than $25 million from the 2021 season, per Perez. It's unclear how long the Commanders allegedly withheld ticket revenue. Remember, this is all still alleged. The franchise and the NFL learned about the allegations recently, according to Perez. The news comes after the Commanders denied a report from Liz Clark of the Washington Post that the House Oversight Committee was investigating allegations of financial improprieties, excuse me, by the team. So they denied it. It's looking like it's true. Perez also reported Thursday that the Congressional Committee expanded its investigation of the Commanders allegedly fostering a toxic work environment to include an exploration of the team's finances and those of owner Dan Snyder. The investigation into the franchise has been going on for months, as I'm sure you've heard somewhere else if you're a sports fan, or potentially on my podcast. And former Washington employees recently brought forth new sexual harassment allegations against Snyder. So, you know what they say, where there's smoke, there's fire. But, I mean, this franchise, speaking of fire, like I said, this franchise is such a dumpster fire. It truly is sad. I mean, they really, really need new ownership. This is reminding me, although there is no racial incident or drama, or what's the word I'm looking for? Racial. My point is, it's looking like Dan Snyder needs to sell the team, similarly to how Donald Sterling was immediately forced to sell the Los Angeles Clippers as soon as that recording of his racist ramblings by his then sugar baby, whatever you want to call it, girlfriend were released. So it's my underlying point is, I'm not as sharp as I usually am, so I apologize to you guys. But my underlying point is, Dan Snyder needs to sell the fucking team. I mean, come on. Let's switch gears to some more football, some real football. After going unsigned during the 2021 NFL season, Frank Gore is officially retiring, a true end of an era. The five-time Pro Bowler said he plans to sign a one-day contract with this offseason with the San Francisco 49ers before officially walking away for good. He's the third all-time leading rusher with 16,000 yards. That is astounding. Quote, probably in a couple of months, Gore said in an Instagram live stream with Bavada. Of course it was with Bavada. We're still trying to figure out when I'm going to do my one-day contract to sign, do my retirement. I told Jed York that I always wanted to be a Niner, so we're working on that right now, and then we're going to also sit down with me and my agent to talk about me working in the front office. I love looking at talent, I love evaluating talent, and I love ball, and they know that I know football players, what it's supposed to take to be a football player. Gore is 38 years old now. He spent his first 10 NFL seasons with the 49ers after being taken in the third round of the 2005 draft. He then spent 3 years with the Indianapolis Colts before finishing his career with one-year runs with the Miami Dolphins, Buffalo Bills, and New York Jets. I mean, he's been so consistent and healthy over the course of his career. He only missed 15 games in 16 seasons as a running back. That is mind-blowing. I mean, just the fact that he played 16 seasons as a running back in the NFL is astounding in and of itself. But the fact that in 16 years, he only missed 15 total games is unbelievable. I mean, it is just insane. Compare him to Ben Simmons, the soft-ass crybaby who is now on the Brooklyn Nets, who might not even play for them throughout the playoffs, but that's a whole other can of worms. Don't even get me started on that guy. But anyway, Frank Gore is third on the NFL's all-time leading rushers list with 16,000 yards, and his 241 games played are the most ever by a running back. So a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer is Frank Gore. Aside from a potential front office stint, Gore will now wait a few years to see whether he'll wear a gold jacket. I mean, I have no doubt that he will. His long-term consistency makes him a seeming lock for Canton. But it'd be fair to say that he was never really dominant at the NFL level. But still, to me, it is a no-brainer that Frank Gore is a surefire Hall of Famer. I mean, a guy that has 16,000 rushing yards and leads running backs in games played with 241. I mean, I don't see how he's not a Hall of Famer. But I don't see how he's not a Hall of Famer. Let's switch gears to the NBA. It's very clear that the NBA just keeps getting better. I mean, especially at the top. Just the level of play, how talented these guys are, it truly is amazing. For the last few weeks, it feels like social media is flooded with, he's the best player in the world on a nightly basis. If the Nuggets, 76ers, or Milwaukee Bucks are in action, you can count on waves of MVP arguments and talking points. The thing about the NBA right now, though, is that the leader in the clubhouse, assuming that there can even be one, is in either debate. The debate can change every night. Nikola Jokic is on pace for the best single season mark of all time in both box plus minus or BPM, which is a basketball box score based metric that estimates a basketball player's contribution to the team when the player is on the court, and player efficiency rating as well. Giannis Antetokounmpo is already a two-time MVP and the reigning finals MVP, and he's on track for the second best single season PER of all time. But wait, at 30.1 points per 75 possessions for his career, Joel Embiid trails only Michael Jordan by 0.2 points. And all three of these guys are in their athletic primes at the same time, all duking it out for the MVP. I mean, it really does change on a nightly basis, on a daily basis. I personally, if I had to go with one, I would say Jokic is the MVP. What he's doing with the Nuggets is insane. No disrespect to Giannis and Embiid. They are playing out of their minds right now. All three of them are. Shout out to Devin Booker and Ja Morant as well. They don't get as much love as they should, although they do get a lot of love as well. They are some dark horse MVP candidates, but it's looking like a three-horse race with Jokic as a pretty sizable favorite at the moment, especially after yesterday's win over the Lakers and how well he played. The average MVP season from 1973-74 to 2020-21 was 26.6 points, 9.3 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.5 steals, almost 1.5 blocks per 75 possessions with a plus 5.5 relative true shooting percentage and an 8.6 BPM. That does not measure up to what Jokic, Giannis, and Embiid are doing. Jokic is at 29 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, 1 block per 75 possessions at a 66.1 true shooting percentage. Giannis, more points with 33, less rebounds at 13, less assists with 6, less steals with 1.1, more blocks with 1.6, and a slightly lower true shooting percentage at 63.5. And Joel Embiid leads the pack with points with 33.5, 12.8 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.3 steals, 1.6 blocks. So, I mean, all three of these guys are having bona fide MVP caliber seasons. I mean, surefire MVP caliber seasons. It almost reminds me of tennis where, I mean, I'm not sure if you guys follow tennis, but if you had where you have Novak Djokovic or had Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, and Rafael Nadal, all three of them were essentially like the Michael Jordan of tennis at the same time. So that is essentially, at least in this season, in this specific season, what Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nikola Jokic are doing. It is amazing. The other thing that I want to bring up is that none of these three players are American, which I find interesting, poignant as well. Seems like the international scene is catching on to the NBA very, very rapidly. There have been 5 seasons in NBA history in which a player averaged at least 29 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 block, and 1 steal per 75 possessions with a 60-plus true shooting percentage. Those three bulleted above and 2 others from Giannis's 2018-19 and 2019-20 are the only seasons on the list. And those average MVP numbers are not much better, if at all, than what we've seen from this season's next group of stars. Luka Doncic is averaging 28 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists, for crying out loud. It'll be his third 28-8 season, which is already second all-time. Second all-time. Oscar Robertson with 5 has more. I'm sure Luka's going to pass that. Knock on wood, hopefully no injuries. Kevin Durant is averaging 29.6 points with a 63.2 true shooting percentage. That's the 7th best true shooting percentage in a 29-point-per-game season ever, just behind the 63.5 of Giannis this year and 2013-14, Kevin Durant. Despite a down shooting year by his standards, the Golden State Warriors still have a point differential around that of a 65-win team when Stephen Curry plays compared to that of a 28-win team when he doesn't. So that shows how important he is if we're talking about most valuable player to the Golden State Warriors. And beyond those 7, you have Jimmy Butler, Ja Morant, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, James Harden, Donovan Mitchell, and Anthony Davis, to name a few. LeBron James, although he hasn't played enough games. Heck, even Clippers forward Paul George and Kawhi Leonard might be tossed into the mix before we're done with this postseason. So on a night-to-night basis, we are seeing so many guys that could be considered the best player in the world, the MVP. I mean, right now, it really is a three-horse race between Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think Jokic, the Joker, deserves it. I went on a tangent. I was going to say that what Jokic is doing without Jamal Murray and someone else is injured on the Nuggets too. I'm blanking on who it is, a really, really important player for that team. But without Jamal Murray, the Nuggets are a championship contender right now with the way Jokic is playing. It is insane. Switching gears to college basketball. Quote, "The winner was going to be joyous and the loser was going to be in agony." Duke's Mike Krzyzewski started out the final press conference of his coaching career with a succinct summary of one of the greatest college basketball games ever played. And in the 1,570th game of his illustrious career, the sight in agony was his own. Number 8 seed North Carolina emerged from a 2-hour-long heartstopper featuring 12 ties and 18 lead changes with an 81-77 razor-thin victory over the number 2 seed Duke Blue Devils to end Coach K's career and beat Duke. They beat Duke for the second time in less than a month. The first time was, you probably remember, in Coach K's last home game. And now they beat Coach K in his last ever game in the Final Four to advance to the aforementioned national championship game that will be played in 20 minutes. There was no possible way for this game to live up to the hype, right? It did, though. Every single regular season Duke-UNC game gets the red carpet treatment from the national media multiple times per year. But meeting in the NCAA tournament in the Final Four, no less, for the first time ever, was a whole new level of razzmatazz. What a career Coach K has had. Congrats to UNC. Caleb Love, what a game he had. A fairly quiet first half, but boy, did he show up big. That shot, I mean, he's going to remember that for the rest of his life, as are millions of people, especially people that live in North Carolina. Shout out to Armando Bacot. He had, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's had a double-double in every game of the tournament, including over 20 rebounds against Duke. There was a video with Coach K coming up to him saying, congrats, you were my player of the year. So Coach K, what a wonderful individual Coach K is. And yeah, I mean, I remember my middle school science teacher was a very successful high school basketball coach. And he was, I don't know if he still is, but he was the head coach of the El Salvador men's national basketball team. So no small feat. I mean, you could laugh, but really no small feat. And Coach K was the guy that he looked up to. And that was kind of when I got my introduction into who Coach K is, why he's so respected, why he's so great, what a career he's had. It's kind of surreal that he's not going to be coaching anymore with all the gold medals he's won with Team USA, all the Final Fours, what is it, 5 national championships, like 15 Final Fours. I mean, the guy is a legend, always be remembered. Yeah. And so shout out to Coach K, man. Really just a great, amazing coach, even better person from what I heard, what I read, what I've seen. And yeah, let's switch gears to some hockey. The Florida Panthers are headed to the Stanley Cup playoffs for a third consecutive season. I mean, I remember the Florida Panthers were a perennial bottom feeder in the NHL, and they look scary. I mean, trading for Claude Giroux at the trade deadline when they're already the second best NHL team on paper, at least according to Vegas. Point wise, I believe they're number one. They have 102 points with a record of 48-15-6. They became the first team in the NHL to clinch a spot in the 2022 postseason with a 5-3 win over the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday at KeyBank Center. With the win, the Panthers moved to 48-15-6 and extended a commanding lead in the Atlantic Division. They are followed by the Toronto Maple Leafs and Tampa Bay Lightning. What a stacked division that is. That is insane. You got the Panthers with 102 points, and then the Maple Leafs at Lightning with 93 apiece, who are playing each other. So a huge matchup. Yeah, the Colorado Avalanche are actually number one on paper as well at 49-14-6 with 104 points. That team is absolutely nuts. Cale Makar, probably the most talented defenseman I've ever seen. And according to hockey historians, he's the most talented defenseman they've ever seen too. So adding that to a world-class goalie in Darcy Kemper, Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, that team is special. The Panthers have spent most of the season atop the Eastern Conference standings thanks to the incredible seasons from Jonathan Huberdeau, Alexander Barkov, and Sam Reinhart. Huberdeau has posted over 100 points. Barkov has 72 and Reinhart has 65. So the Panthers are scary. The thing is, though, their defense is a little bit suspect at times. On Saturday, they were down 6-2 to the New Jersey Devils on the road, and they miraculously scored 5 straight goals, including the overtime winner to take a 7-6 overtime win. The thing is, though, that's the Devils, who are not a playoff team by any standards this year, and falling behind by that big of a margin, that large of a margin, against playoff teams like the Lightning, like the Avalanche, like the Hurricanes, whatever playoff team it is, you won't be able to come back like that on a nightly basis. So that's something that the Panthers should probably figure out sooner rather than later. But let's transition to some baseball. This is, or at least it used to be, a bit of a sensitive topic for me, but let's get into it. Former Houston Astros outfielder Carlos Beltran spoke out about the team's cheating scandal from their championship season in 2017. In an interview with Yes Network, Beltran said, quote, "We did cross the line when asked about the level of cheating the Astros engaged in," saying, quote, "We all did what we did. Looking back today, we were wrong. I wish I would have asked more questions about what we were doing." Even though Beltran attempted to express remorse about the situation, some of his comments suggest he's also trying to deflect his own responsibility for the scheme. I mean, I don't blame the guy. I I understand everyone's looking out for themselves first and foremost. Per MLB's official investigation report, Beltran was one of the several players on the 2017 Astros who devised a plan to help improve the efficacy of the sign-stealing operation. The system involved Houston employees using video footage from a camera set up in center field to decode the signs of opposing teams and relay it to players on the field. Beltran was one of the Astros players who came up with the idea to have someone bang on a trash can to relay to the hitter what the opposing pitcher was going to throw. During the interview with Kay of Yes Network, Beltran said he wanted someone in the organization to tell them to stop doing it. I mean, that is one of the dumbest things I have ever heard. You wanted someone in the organization to tell you to stop doing it? How about you just stop doing it? If you, like, am I misconstruing what this guy is saying? You wanted someone in the organization to tell you to stop doing it. How about you just not do it? Like, what am I missing? Quote, I wish the organization would have said to us, hey, man, what you guys are doing, we need to stop this. I mean, okay, let's say hypothetically someone in the organization did tell them this. Do you, listener right now listening to me ramble about sports, do you think that Carlos Beltran and the rest of the Houston Astros would have stopped based on someone in the organization telling them, hey, guys, you should stop doing this? I, for one, think not. But that's just me. Beltran went on to say he did not think the system worked in every game and they, quote, had such a good team anyway. You did. You did have a really good and talented team. So why the fuck did you need to cheat then? I mean, like, if you had such a good team, why do you need to cheat? I mean, like I said, it's a sensitive topic for me as a diehard Dodger fan. We took these guys 7 games, despite the fact that they were cheating so hard. I mean, there's a difference between kind of, like, everyone knows the saying, if you're not cheating, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But there's a difference between that and what the Astros did. I mean, what they did is just blatantly disrespectful to the game of baseball, completely destroys the integrity of the game. The fallout from the scandal resulted in the Astros being fined $5 million and forfeiting first and second round draft picks in 2020 and 2021. Like I said extensively on this podcast, that sets a very bad precedent in my opinion, because that just shows other teams, oh, well, if we can cheat to win a World Series and it won't be taken away from us, we're only going to lose $5 million, which to any baseball team, any MLB team, is about the same as $1 or 50 cents for me, and a couple of draft picks that may or may not pan out. I mean, baseball, all draft picks, you never know, there's risk, but baseball draft picks especially. So you're essentially trading a couple draft picks and $5 million in exchange for a world championship that won't get, that, yeah, it's tainted, but you still, I mean, they're still World Series champions. So that was a horrible precedent. General manager Jeff Luhnow and manager AJ Hinch were suspended for the 2020 season. Houston owner Jim Crane subsequently fired Luhnow and Hinch. Alex Cora, who was the bench coach on the Astros in 2017 and implicated in the scheme, agreed to a mutual parting of ways as manager of the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox had to forfeit their second round pick in the 2020 MLB draft after Commissioner Rob Manfred found evidence of sign stealing by their team during their championship season in 2018. But the scale of their scheme was significantly lower than what the Houston Astros were caught doing. Cora was also suspended for the rest of the 2020 season. He was rehired, though, by the Red Sox in November 2020. Beltran had been hired as manager of the New York Mets in November 2019. He parted ways with the team just 2 months after the results of MLB's investigation were announced. The New York Yankees, who lost to the Astros in the 2017 ALCS, hired Beltran in January to serve as a game analyst for the Yes Network. He is going to call 36 games for the team during the 2020 season. I wonder how Yankees fans feel about that. But yeah, let's switch gears to some football. How are we doing on time? Oh, we're at 30 minutes. I mean, time is flying when I talk about sports. It's clear Ahmad, quote, Sauce Gardner is not short on confidence heading into the 2022 NFL draft. The Cincinnati Bearcats cornerback gave his thoughts on the upcoming class, saying, quote, I'm the best player in the draft. Where do I start with this? I love confidence. I absolutely love people being confident. I am very confident in myself. But this, I mean, just look at Josh Rosen. 8 mistakes ahead of me. How did that pan out, Josh? Not so great. I'm not saying, and I'm not hoping that this happens to Sauce Gardner. But it's like, it's almost like he's jinxing himself. And you may believe in superstitious things like that, you may not, but it's like, why do you have to go on Twitter and say that? Like, that's what I don't understand. You can believe that, you can tell that to yourself, which you should. You can tell that to your family, your friends, your boys, your girls, whatever you want, NFL teams, college coaches, NFL, like whoever it is. But why do you go on Twitter with hundreds of thousands or whatever amount of followers you have and say, I'm the best player in the draft? That to me shows a little more arrogance than confidence. And there's a huge difference between the two. He's certainly in the conversation after earning consensus All-American honors and the AAC Defensive Player of the Year award last season. He tallied 3 interceptions and 3 sacks while leading the Bearcats to the college football playoff. He notably did not give up a single touchdown in coverage over 33 collegiate games, which is extremely impressive. Don't get me wrong, it's extremely impressive. Quote, I don't have plans on giving one up in the NFL. So again, extreme confidence. I mean, he's oozing confidence, this kid. But these are the kind of words that come back to bite you. I mean, so Bleacher Report scouting department lists Gardner as the number 11 overall player and second best cornerback available. So Bleacher Report doesn't even list him as the number 1 cornerback available. They might be horribly wrong. You know, we never know how draft picks pan out. Some people are so wrong. Some people are spot on. We'll see. I think he'll be a solid player in the NFL. I don't think he's the best player in the upcoming draft class, but his confidence could be endearing to teams that want a player unafraid of the daily challenges in the league. Of course, Gardner is not the only one in the class who thinks highly of his abilities. Quote, the most ridiculous thing I've heard is that I'm not the best player in the draft, Oregon pass rusher Kayvon Thibodeau said at his pro day. Only one player can be the top overall pick in Las Vegas on April 28th, although the prospects will get plenty of chances to prove themselves on the field during their pro careers. So yeah, let's actually talk about we got a lot to talk about, a lot more to talk about, actually, I should say. Let's talk about one more story before we call it a day. Despite rumors that the Seattle Seahawks might be willing to trade star receiver DK Metcalf this offseason, one key figure does not know anything about such talks, and that is DK Metcalf himself. Saying, quote, haven't heard anything per at DKM14, obviously. He tagged himself essentially on Twitter saying he has not heard anything. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported on SportsCenter on Sunday that Metcalf's name was, quote, buzzing in league circles, saying, quote, I'm told that Metcalf has gotten indications informally from the team that he's not going to be traded to Seattle, Seattle has said publicly they have no intention to trade him, but the execs I talked to keep bringing him up that maybe they would either be willing to move on at the right price or that Metcalf would welcome a change. So something is going on here. It's just hard to figure out what. But he's got 1 year left on his rookie deal. He would need a new contract as part of a trade. That's the tricky part. So basically, Jeremy Fowler said a whole lot of nothing. I could have went on SportsCenter and said that. He essentially said literally nothing, saying, oh, DK could welcome a trade or a change, or the Seahawks could move on from him at the right price, but it doesn't look like they're shopping him at this time. So why are you saying anything? This, to me, I mean, I hate this about sports media. So many of these stupid-ass reporters are just trying to be the first ones to get, like, it's almost like they shoot 20 half-court shots proverbially and hope that one goes in. And, oh, I called it. DK Metcalf got traded. I mean, it really is kind of pathetic if we're honest. But ladies and gentlemen, this episode was kind of all over the place. I'm feeling really rusty. Let me know what you guys think. Love you guys so much. Thank you guys so much for listening. And I'll see you guys on the next one. I'm out.